Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high-quality, continuing professional development for all GOC-registered optometrists. With case studies and in-depth conversations, each month we explore the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. You can gain one CPD point by listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on our website, docket.info. In this episode, we'll be exploring one of the GOC's areas of continual professional development that's easily overlooked or forgotten about. Leadership and accountability is the fourth CPD domain that optometrists must cover in their three-year cycle of CPD. While some sections of the GOC standards of practice do relate to this domain, the topic of leadership and accountability goes further and is by no means limited to those standards. In Docket's March webinar, which asked, "Are all optometrists leaders?", three cases were presented that covered the GOC standards relating to supervision, patient records, and maintaining a safe patient environment. Later on, we'll dive deeper on some of those points with one of the webinar speakers, Brian McCotter.
The best summary of clinical governance for me is, what do you do to keep your patients safe? It's about constantly just reviewing what you do and just thinking, is there any little amendments that we can make to make things slightly better for the patients?
We'll start this podcast, though, with a wider approach on leadership before moving on to some of the more specific points around accountability in optometry practice. Leadership in optometry can take many forms, from solving a patient's complaints successfully to managing a team of optometrists to best deal with our busy workflows. First of all, I'm joined by someone whom I'm obliged to say is actually a great leader, my boss, when I work in practice anyway, and that's Matt Pickering. Matt is the general manager of Optegra UK, which is a group of 12 eye hospitals and clinics providing private and NHS ophthalmology services. Although Matt isn't an optometrist himself, he's worked in healthcare for almost three decades and has managed optometrists and other healthcare professionals for 18 years in various clinical environments, such as Vision Express and Bupa. Hi, Matt. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So, Matt, let's start with the basics. What is leadership?
Good question. Firstly, I don't think you can have an effective leader without followers. For someone to follow a good leader, I think you need to be trustworthy. I think you need to lead by example. I think you need to show empathy. But also, a good leader has to embrace accountability. A typical leader would have accountability across many different areas of the business. But I also think, where possible, and it's easier said than done, a good leader would always do what they think is right. Now, of course, what I think may be right, someone else may not think is right. But I think in general, whether it be managing people, whether it be business expectations, whether it be interacting with external people, I think as a premise, if you do what you always believe to be right, that will take you a long way and broadly would be accepted as a good leader.
And how do you apply that skill set across a wide team? So, for example, within, you know, Optegra at the moment, we have a very wide range of people that you lead over. So a multidisciplinary team, clinicians, business managers and so on. How do you work around that?
I think with experience, really. If I go back 15, 20 years, well, I was much younger than I am now. And that first question, by the way, I think I would have answered that very differently 15, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. And I think in terms of how I apply it, I go back and I think, I'm not sure if I applied it that great early on in my career. I would have tried to, but I think largely with experience, I don't look at things that I do and necessarily purposely do them. With the experience I've got over 20 years, I like to think it comes more naturally now than it would have done before. And experience means I've learnt from a lot of mistakes and got a lot of things wrong. But fortunately, been given the opportunity to learn from them. And I think, secondly, I've got a good team behind me. I'm not just saying that because you're in that team. But I think a good leader will aspirationally want to build a great team. And again, that's easier said than done. But I've been fortunate enough to be given the opportunity, particularly Optegra, to build a good team. So applying those things that I think make a great leader is a lot easier when I've got a great team to work with.
So when you talk about team members, are you talking about bringing people in from different areas so they can apply their area of knowledge and their expertise to sort of support what you need to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, currently in Optegra, I've got a line manager team of about 10, 11, and that's optometrists like yourself. It's heads of clinical services, so clinical elite people who've been clinically based and trained for 20, 25 years, and operational people. So the regional operations managers report into me as well, and also procurement. So my role as general manager does cover managing probably four areas of the business. And they are more linked, I think, than people may think, or at times it appears, because actually there's still one common goal.
And in your role now, what do you expect from your leads? I mean, I'm going to be taking notes here for when I have my next review, but you know, what is it that you expect your leads to deliver?
So firstly, a leader that works for me would have to be invested in the business and invest time in their people, in their team. I think that's fundamental. I think secondly, understanding that we have to deliver on multiple fronts. So in the sector we're in, we have to be safe. Obviously, we have to give great outcomes. We have to give great patient care and service. We also have to deliver financially. Aspirationally, we should strive to deliver on all fronts, the whole of the pie, rather than just individual pieces. And I think the last thing I'd say is to understand the difference between responsibility and accountability, which we speak about a lot. I think that evolves over time. I don't think that that's necessarily something you just understand because someone's told you. I think you need to sort of experience it. But for me, responsibility is task orientated. You could have a project where you have five or six optometrists who are responsible for delivering a project. But accountability is who ultimately owns it. And if you're a leader, there'll be some things where you ultimately own. You are the accountable person.
Yeah, I think with accountability, it can be perceived as different in optometry because optometrists don't naturally think of themselves as leaders. But actually, within their practice environment, they are the lead because they're the people that are ultimately accountable to the GOC. Yeah. You know, from a regulation point of view, they're the people that are held accountable if something isn't done quite right. So I think it is important optometrists do realise that even within a small environment, they're also a lead as well.
I mean, my first managerial role, it was in Tesco, so it wasn't in the high street per se, but it was an optician's manager in Cambridge. And I was the manager and I had an optometrist called Mohammed, but everyone perceived him as a leader of that team. There was no title per se. I was the manager, but it was very much a joint effort and everyone looked to him. So the title, I don't think, is a thing. It's an optician, high street or in a hospital setting, has huge influence and people will look up to that person, whether it be for advice or guidance or safe practice. And everywhere I've worked, that's definitely been the case, particularly in high street opticians where the optometrist has a huge role.
And do you think that that person was seen as lead because he was clinically the most valid person to lead that part of the team because he was an optometrist?
Yeah, I think there's a bit about the role, the expertise, the knowledge, particularly then. I mean, we're talking about 2005. A lot of places start to come away from having a dispensing optician on site per se. So yes, clinically they would be the go-to person, but actually, well, I was lucky enough to work. It went beyond that. They had a role in almost the management of the practice. And certainly when I wasn't there, Mohammed would have been the go-to person. Yeah. So I think it extended a lot beyond that. I think it's a respect thing as well. And I've worked with some great optoms who saw their role more than just in the testing room.
Yeah.
So why do you think that you took the opportunity to be a lead in Optegra?
Well, that's a funny question to answer. And I think a lot of the optometrist listeners will resonate with this. I'm a clinician first, and I didn't do optometry to be a manager, and I certainly didn't aspire to manage people. But I think I accepted a leadership position because ultimately it was self-preservation. Because I want to be able to do my job and I want to do it well. And if I'm in a position where I am a lead, I can influence those factors that influence that day or contribute to that day. So I can perhaps input onto, you know, how teams are built, how the diary is organised, what the numbers are like and things like that. And even though I might not have the final say on what equipment we buy or, you know, what the target figures are, I have a say in how we achieve those targets. I get to present my case to the senior leadership as to these are the pros and cons for buying this piece of kit. I get to put the clinician's perspective in front of them so they can take that into account. So although I may not have the final decision, I can help to influence the decisions that are made and be a voice for other optometrists. So I think that's why I did it.
I think that's right. When I first started out, if someone had said, you're a manager now, what does that mean? I would have said, oh, I need to manage people. And I think that's what people first think. Like you said, you didn't necessarily want to be a manager of people. But I think being a leader is far more than that. It's having an input, as you said, having influence, being part of a decision-making team, being able to shape something and being able to be someone who has a say in how it progresses and how it grows. So it's a lot more than just the management of people, albeit that is an important part of the job.
So having worked with optometrists for quite a long time, what are the most important things that we can improve on in terms of leadership in general as a group?
I think understanding that it doesn't need to be either or you don't need to excel at everything. I've seen some brilliant optometrists, whether it be in the high street or now in a hospital setting, who are outstanding at what they do and worried that they've got to be outstanding everything else that perhaps doesn't come as natural to them. And I don't think that's the case. I think people are seen as credible and people will follow and be inspired by people who understand what they're good at and share that and do really great at it. So I don't think that people need to think they've got to be brilliant at everything. I think as well, I'm not an optometrist, so I've never spent 8 hours in a really small room. I don't know what that feels like, but taking a moment to pause and reflect before deciding or coming to conclusions. Someone once said, never send an email late at night, type it, save it to your draft box, and in the morning you won't want to send it and you'll delete it. Even just pausing for 5 minutes, because with an optometrist, you may be in the room and you come out a few hours later and this has happened, and it can be really easy to make decisions. I think pausing where you can. The third thing is, it's so difficult, but trying to invest time in your team. I mean, in your role now, it would be so easy for you not to be able to find the time to invest in the other optometrists here. But I think where you can do that, you'll be rewarded for it.
Yeah, because I do find that actually, as optometrists, you've mentioned already, we spend a lot of the time in a room on our own because the person that we're talking to is gone after 20 minutes. So we don't necessarily talk to each other a lot during the day. So it is really important to have that catch up at the beginning of the day. If it's just a good morning, how was your weekend? And at the end of the day, we just share stories. You know, if you've had a difficult day, it's so much better unloading it before you leave work rather than stewing over it in the car and then unloading it on your family when you get home. So yeah, it's good to talk to
colleagues. I think as well, it's so easy as a leader, I think, to think, right, I've got some time with this person later on today and I've got to talk about this, and this. And it'll all be business-related topics probably, but my current line manager, I have a one-to-one with him every week, and sometimes the first 10 minutes of what did you do last weekend, what do you have, and that's what I call investing in someone. You know, not spending every single minute talking about conversion rate or something like that, actually getting to know the people that work for you, actually investing proper time in them.
Yeah, yeah. If an optometrist is listening and wants to develop their leadership skills, perhaps they want to support their practice better, or maybe if they're aspiring to a senior leadership position, but they don't quite know where to start, what advice would you give?
I think if you can find a mentor, that's a brilliant starting point. If there's someone that you know, inside or outside where you work, but someone who's willing to invest time in you and can mentor you, give you some honest feedback, challenge your thinking in a way that perhaps others won't, that's valuable. I have a mentor at the moment who's external to the business. I check in with every single month. That's not always possible, but when that's possible, I would encourage anyone to take advantage of that. But I think just reading books, listening to podcasts like this, but also, I don't know if you've come across things like the six thinking hats theory, which talks about six different personality traits and they all wear different hats. And as a leader, you've got to wear a red hat one day, a white hat the next day, a blue hat, and you're constantly changing because everyone's different. Doing workshops like that, if the opportunity presents itself. I remember doing that years ago and it was the best half day I ever spent. But also asking your own team for feedback, that's difficult, that. And early on in my career, I swerved it. If I could find a way of not doing it. But even if you're starting a leadership role, asking for feedback from people who know you, it can be anonymous, if that's an issue. But asking for honest feedback will help. And building a plan. I know a plan isn't for everyone. I can only talk about myself. I built a development plan, a personal development plan. And if you build a development plan for yourself and you look at it and you think, this is easy, I'll nail this, it's not the right development plan. You should look at it and think, it should make you feel uncomfortable a little bit, I think.
It should stretch you
and challenge you if it's really going to deliver for you. So any of those, all of those are good and be a good starting point.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful, actually, because I think what I've learned from what you've just said is that actually you've got to work to be a good leader. You can't just expect to acquire the skills naturally and just to fall into a role and be good at it. You've actually got to invest some of your own time and actually want it. And you talk about professional development plans. As optometrists, we have to have a professional development plan for continuing professional development. And again, it's supposed to be something that stretches you rather than just ticking the box. So I think there are parallels that people will be able to see.
It's easy to write a development plan that's easy to do.
Yeah.
Anyone can do that.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Next, we'll speak to Brian McCotter to explore leadership in practice when thinking about supervision, patient records, and maintaining a safe patient environment. You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. Every month, we explore the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. So if you've got any suggestions that you think your colleagues would benefit from hearing, email us. The address is podcast@docket.info, or you can tweet us @soundoptometry. In this episode of Sound Optometry, we're exploring leadership and accountability in optometric practice. This podcast serves as a follow-up to Docket's March 2023 webinar, which asked, are all optometrists leaders? If you haven't yet watched that session, find it on the Docket website or click on the link in this podcast's description. The feedback we received from the recent webinar showed that you really did appreciate clarification on the rules around supervision and delegation. But you also had some questions that we didn't quite have enough time to cover in the webinar's Q&A session. So to answer these questions and to better understand how the GOC standards relating to accountability should impact on us in optometric practice, I'm now joined by one of the stars of the webinar, Brian McCotter. Hello, Brian. Thanks for joining me.
That's okay. It's a pleasure to be here.
So the GOC standard says that optometrists need to ensure that supervision, when it's undertaken in your practice, it needs to be done appropriately and it complies within law. So what does appropriate mean in this case, and how can we check what we're doing is actually legal?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. It's an area that I think makes a lot of people feel a little bit nervous when we start to talk about law and the GOC and accountability. So if we think about, you know, in the eyes of the law and the GOC, I think what they're meaning by that is that as the optometrist in the practice, you are accountable for the care that's given in that practice. And it's very hard to be very specific because there's lots of different types and sizes of practice. So in a larger practice, that can be a bit more complicated if there's several clinicians in on the same day. In a smaller practice where you might be the only optometrist there, that's a bit more black and white, isn't it? Where you're accountable for the care that takes place. And what we mean by that is, although that you may be in your test room examining patients, that your colleagues outside, every patient that walks in, you know, in the eyes of the law, you're accountable for the interactions that go on outside your test room as well. So that's where there's a lot of different terms as well that we think about with supervision, that kind of thing, as well as lots of different pieces of guidance. And that's where I would direct people to find this information out. There's obviously the Opticians Act. It's very difficult to read the Opticians Act and understand what that means exactly in practice. And that's why I like the college guidance, because for me, the college guidance is somebody who has sat and read the Opticians Act, looked at the standards of practice from the GOC and tried to write it in a way that this is what it means for you in practice. So there's some great information in the college guidance, and that's where I would direct most people to start to get your understanding of where you're accountable.
If you work in a multiple, you may not be necessarily accountable for all the interactions, because some of the patients that are coming in and receiving care, you may not have had any interaction with altogether. But there are rules for businesses as well, aren't there, for, you know, people who are classed as body corporates, as it were. So it's about being sensible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And I think it's always a good idea for optometrists to have some general oversight as to what's going on outside of the test room, regardless of whether they work in an individual practice or in a multiple. Because if you see someone that's doing a visual fields test and you overhear that it's not perhaps being done quite correctly, and I remember working for a multiple a long time ago, and I remember overhearing an advisor saying to the patient, oh, how many flashes of light did you see there? And the patient gave the wrong answer. She said, oh, did you see anything around 2 o'clock? So obviously that was something that I sought to address straight away. But it's a case of having that overview, isn't it? Just sort of being responsible and being aware of what's going on around you and not just keeping yourself to your own room.
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, in this podcast we're talking about leadership. That's where optometrists can be leaders, because we have the knowledge that colleague might be unaware or not had the training for a little while and fallen into a habit there. And that's where we can make a massive impact at the care of our patients, because we have the knowledge. We can lead by example to make sure that that gets put right and show the colleague the right way to do things.
In practice, what are the key tasks that tend to fall under this sort of supervision requirement?
It depends what you're supervising, who you're supervising. But if we're trying to think of direct supervision, which is kind of the more enhanced type of supervision you would expect, if I think of myself as an optometrist, I have a pre-reg optometrist. It's very clearly written by the College of Optometrists when you do your training that you are on the premises and in a position to intervene. And you have to satisfy yourself that is the case. The other things that need direct supervision in practice are any delegated functions. So if you're delegating anything from the sight test, a pre-screen, a visual fields, that kind of thing, again, you need to be on the premises in a position to intervene, as well as the sale and supply of optical appliances to those in restricted groups. So we'd think about maybe patients under the age of 16, somebody who's severely sight impaired, that kind of thing. And optical appliances, that again, that's glasses, contact lenses, sports goggles, anything that corrects eyesight to that restricted group, we need to be physically on the premises.
Yes. And further guidance from this can be found on the College Guidance for Professional Practice as well. So that's always a good reference document for people to refer to if they're not quite sure what the restricted categories are and what the supervision requirements are for the different tasks.
And the main thing I'd say as well is if you're not sure, then ask. If you don't ask, you won't get the answer. There's the college advisors. Some of us are members of the AOP. There's plenty of people out there. If you're not sure about the situation that you're in, get some advice from somebody that can point you in the right direction.
So one of the other GOC standards that relates to the leadership and accountability domain is maintaining adequate patient records. So this is something that we're all familiar with, something that we all strive to do consistently. But how can practitioners ensure that they're doing this to the right standard?
It's hard to be very descriptive because some of us will use different types of records. I think most places nowadays have electronic clinical records and they're all very, very different. I think you just have to satisfy yourself that you are doing some kind of perhaps a clinical audit on your own patient records on a regular basis. And that could be a very complicated spreadsheet. It could be more straightforward. I think for those of us that work for multiples, there may be even a company process that you can use, that you can follow. If you're not in that position, there are other places you can look. So if we go on the qualityandoptometry.co.uk website, that is more related for English GOS contracts. But if you're not in England, you can still access the website and they have a very useful kind of clinical audit tool that you can use yourself from there. And there is some information on the AOP website about how to audit your records as well. It's just important that we do something to reflect and improve the quality of our records, because you know what it's like when you're busy. It's very, very difficult to have absolutely perfect records. It's always good to go back and reflect and think about what you could maybe have done a bit better.
Yes, I mean, none of us are perfect. And I think when I think about audit, it can seem like quite a daunting task, because you always think of audits as being quite detailed and taking a long time, and really we don't have time to do that. But actually, they can be simplified as long as they're still effective. So certainly it may be a case of starting with a tool, like, for example, you mentioned the quality and optometry tool. That might be quite an extensive audit, but there's no harm in taking some of it and tailoring it to your own needs. And I suppose it's also thinking about what you do with that audit afterwards as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
What action are you taking?
Yeah, if you take one action away from an audit that improves your record keeping a little bit, then that's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. So apart from the eye examination, what other information should be considered as part of the patient records?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. I think when it comes to, history and symptoms, clinical examination, as optometrists, we know what we need to write and what we need to record. What would really help finish the examination and the record keeping off grade is that all that advice that comes at the end of a test, that little conversation you have with the patient. If they ask, am I legal to drive? And you answer that question, that we document that advice so that if someone else comes in and has to read our notes, they'll be able to give the same answer to the patient. And just generally every patient interaction that you have from there on out. And this is where we talk about leadership and accountability as well. If the patient calls back for an adjustment with their glasses, you know, is that documented? So if they're having a problem with their varifocals, we increase the pantoscopic tilt. If that's documented, then if the patient ends back up for a recheck or anything like that, you know what's been done, rather than having a blank record card and thinking what's happened for those couple of weeks. So in general, the more we can document and record, the better the quality of care that the patient will be.
I think that's a really good tip, actually, thinking about the record as being recording each interaction rather than actually each task or each test that you've done. Because if you think about it from an interaction point of view, there's lots of interactions, isn't there, that you might not think are actually significant. And it's not till you actually need that information and realise it's not there that you realise how significant it might actually be.
Yes, yeah, the more the better.
The other thing I just wanted to mention as well is recording supplementary examinations. So I remember a colleague of mine who was a locum who had worked in a practice, and a visual field test had been carried out, and she had checked the visual field test results at the time and they were fine, but she didn't record it because the actual field was actually printed out and inserted into the record. This was back in the day where it was a paper record system. And there was a fitness to practice case brought up a couple of years later, and they challenged whether or not she'd actually carried out or had someone else carry out a field test for her and what the results were. It was noticed on the record that one had been done, but not what the actual results were. And because the field test had become detached from the paper record, it wasn't in there anymore. It was very difficult to defend that case.
Yes, yeah. Whereas a little note just to say field's full optometrist signature would have been fine, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what it comes down to, really. I think good record keeping isn't just about good professional practice. It can potentially defend you in a fitness to practice case. So in a way, your records hold you to account, don't they?
Yeah, and similarly, I've always used that term about clinical audit as well, as people are getting into the process of doing these things now. If there's ever a question about the quality of your record keeping, having some evidence to say that you've audited your records and made some improvements, that could help you in the long term as well.
And on this theme of accountability, why do you think the GOC have placed it so firmly in the CPD domains?
If you think of the GOC's main function, it is to protect the public, isn't it? So by putting accountability directly into one of our domains, I guess they're asking us to make sure that we take a prominent role in all the patient care that's provided within the optometry practices, and maybe not just focus on the care that we provide in the test room. So being more aware of clinical governance and delegation and record keeping, these kinds of things. All these little things, if you do them well, will help to keep the patient safe when they're in your practice. And ultimately, that's the main thing that we're all aiming to achieve.
You've mentioned audit a couple of times already, and that falls under that huge umbrella of clinical governance. I work in a hospital environment, and we have a whole sort of barrage of audits that happen on a continuous basis, from infection control to mandatory training to life support, things like that. So lots of things are audited all the time. And I think ultimately it's to make sure that we are clinically safe, that we are safe to practice.
Yeah, the best summary of clinical governance to me is, what do you do to keep your patients safe? It's about constantly just reviewing what you do and just thinking, is there any little amendments that we can make to make things slightly better for the patients?
Yeah, so it's taking action on the audits as well, isn't it? It's showing what you found, what plans you've put into place to improve that service or that area of practice, and evidencing it so that if you are ever audited externally, then you can show that this is the way that you work and this is how you constantly strive to improve your patient service.
Yeah, and that's the clinical leadership that I think that the GOC want to see optometrists implemented in stores.
Brian, thank you very much for your time today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
If you go to docket.info and search for Sound Optometry, you can also find additional reading materials and resources for this episode. By listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on the website, you can gain one CPD point covering leadership and accountability. We'll be back next month to discuss the guidelines around the screening of patients who are taking hydroxychloroquine and what this actually means when it comes to examining these patients in community practice. Until then, we'd really appreciate it if you help spread the word about the podcast. Tell your colleagues to listen and subscribe to the series on your podcast app so you don't miss an episode. The producer is Jason Hoskin. I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thanks for listening.